We begin this Sunday morning with the biggest political scandal of all, collusion and conspiracy at the highest levels against President Trump. Now, Director of National Intelligence Tulsi Gabbard revealing what this audience has known all along, a cabal of high-ranking officials led by then-President Barack Obama, CIA Director John Brennan, and Hillary Clinton, among others, took the world on a wild goose chase to try and take down their political enemy, Donald Trump, no matter the casualties along the way. DNA Tulsi Gabbard is now calling for prosecutions, revealing declassified documents from the Russia collusion made-up investigation, which she says detail a treasonous conspiracy by officials at the highest level of the Obama White House to stop incoming President Donald Trump. The cabal included Barack Obama, John Brennan, James Clapper, Hillary Clinton, Joe Biden, Jim Comey, and Susan Rice, who pushed a made-up story that President Trump colluded with Russia to win the 2016 election so the cabal would not lose their grip on power. All of this exactly as then-Intelligence Committee Chairman Devin Nunes, Judiciary Committee member John Ratcliffe, and President Trump himself told us so many times from day one.
All right, that's the urgent voice of Maria Bartiromo, and I couldn't say it any better than she did. It is a blockbuster story. It happened on Friday night when Tulsi Gabbard, the director of the Defense National Intelligence Agency, dropped her report and referred Barack Obama and John Brennan and Hillary Clinton and many others to be prosecuted for treasonous acts. Think about that. We've talked about that at this microphone for so many years. Much of what she's accusing them of, we know about. You know, if you've listened to me. Although there are some things we didn't know. And so today, here's the deal. A friend of mine I've known for a long time, he's a professional friend, he's a colonel, but he has been the chief investigator for Devin Nunes. When this all broke, Derek is deeply in the weeds of this, and I had, interestingly enough, invited him to join me for this broadcast for other things before that story broke on Friday. And so we have the advantage of having one of the chief investigators, a guy who knows all of this inside and out, as our guest today on Sandy Rios 24/7. Well, before we get to that, let me tell you that, of course, Preborn is one of our sponsors because we believe in what they do. And since Roe versus Wade was overturned, 105 abortion clinics have shut down. But that doesn't mean that the women have disappeared. They're still searching, now more desperate than ever. And Planned Parenthood is racing to fill the gap. But we can get there first, with compassion, with truth, and with life. Where 105 abortion clinics once ended life, Preborn is claiming that ground by installing 105 ultrasound machines that speak louder than fear and show mothers the miracle of life. Like with Emily, who was abortion-bound and absolutely scared. When she heard her baby's heartbeat on a Preborn ultrasound, she broke down in tears and whispered, "I didn't know she was real." That moment changed her entire life and the life of her baby. Now, I don't normally say this to you, but this is a bigger ask today. An ultrasound machine, that's how we do all of this, costs $15,000. If any of you out there can afford to make a donation like that or a portion of it, please go to preborn.com/Sandy. That's preborn.com/Sandy. These ultrasound machines are put in pregnancy clinics around the United States. And that's how these babies, these women, experience the miracle of seeing their babies. So if you can help to provide the money for that, it's, again, $15,000. But, of course, just $28 provides a life-saving ultrasound to one abortion-vulnerable mom and doubles the chance that she chooses life. All right, go to preborn.com/Sandy. That's preborn.com/Sandy. And please make your most generous donation. You can listen to us on any podcast platform. You can call us. We'd love to hear from you at 662-821-2040. 662-821-2040. You can write us at sandy@afr.net. You can find us on any social media platform. You can find us at our home base, which is afr.net. You can listen. That's American Family Radio. You can listen on Apple or Spotify. You know the drill. And so I hope that you will listen and share this show with your friends if you think it would be a benefit to them. Well, we're in for, I don't know, I guess we'd call it a treat, but I would say a firsthand account of information you might not hear anywhere else because of the nature of the job that Colonel Derek Harvey has done through the years of uncovering this treasonous act by the highest levels of our government, including President Obama. It's a thriller that no one would ever have written because they would never have dreamed it could be as bad and as deep as it actually was. We'll talk about it today on Sandy Rios 24/7.
From American Family Radio, Sandy Rios.
We are not called to be nice. We are often called to be confrontational.
And here with me in D.C. is Fox News contributor Sandy Rios.
I think the most important thing we need to demonstrate to our children is genuineness, that we actually believe what we say we believe.
Longtime Fox News contributor Sandy Rios, thanks very much for being with us.
Seek justice. Not social justice, but God's justice. What's right and what's wrong.
Sandy Rios is with the American Family Association.
A pro-life radio talk show host.
We've got to say this is the line. Life is sacred.
Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association.
Step up. Speak up. Say something. Do something.
Today, the biggest political scandals ever seen, and all in the last 10 years. As Democrats get deranged over Donald Trump replacing them and loosening their grip on power, no lie was too big, no casualty too severe, as scandal after scandal tries to take down the Democrats' political enemy, Donald Trump. From Russia collusion to the Biden dementia cover-up and the auto pen, Democrats take it on and finally face the consequences. This week, exposing documents that reveal Barack Obama and the highest levels of government efforts to stop a brash businessman outsider from upending their power.
All right, Sandy Rios with you. I borrowed that little opening from Maria Bartiromo because she had Tulsi Gabbard, the director of the Defense National Intelligence Assessment Organization, who came out with a report on Friday referring Barack Obama, Hillary Clinton, James Comey, James Clapper, John Brennan, Susan Rice, and others for investigation at the Justice Department. And she calls it treasonous conspiracy because new information has come out to prove what many of us already suspected. Now, interestingly enough, I had invited our today's guest before this broke. But the irony is that Derek Harvey was the investigator who discovered all this information. I remember it so well. Many of you will, too. When Devin Nunes, the head of the, it was the House Permanent Select Committee on Intelligence, did a press conference out in front of some private thing on the White House lawn that he had been able to go in and assess and read, and he looked like he was just in shock. I'll never forget it as long as I live. This was right after the election of 2016. Well, the one that prepared that intelligence was Colonel Derek Harvey. I've known Derek for a long time, but we've never really had a chance to do an interview. And of all days, to talk to him, I want to give you just a little bit of his background. He's a colonel, retired from the United States Army. There's so many things I can't tell you everything, but let me just say he's an internationally recognized analyst and global policy advisor. He was a top advisor to four multinational forces in Iraq and multinational corps Iraq commanders. He worked on Capitol Hill as the director for investigations and senior advisor to the House Permanent Select Intelligence Committee and the White House National Security Council under President Trump. He would brief the Republican caucus on worldwide intelligence developments. He also did a lot of research on COVID-19. He's just discovered so many things, but it's a name you don't know because he's behind the scenes. He's one of those heroes whose names you haven't heard, but today you're going to hear it. So he was the one who led the effort to the recognition of Jerusalem as the Israeli capital. And there's so much to say, so many more things to say about Derek, and maybe we'll get into some of those, but I want to not waste any more of our time and welcome him this morning. Good morning, Derek. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you, Sandy. It's good to be on your show.
All right, so you were working for Devin Nunes. He was the head of that House Permanent Select Committee. And you were you his chief investigator? I don't know the title.
Yeah, I was his director of investigations and also titled, senior advisor. you know, that's right below the staff director, who is the administrative lead for the House Intelligence Committee.
Okay. On that day, this was right after the election, I will never forget it, and he was so shaken up, and lots of things happened after that, but what had you seen, Derek? What did he read in that secret place that he had to read this stuff? I know it's long, but in general, what did he see that was so shocking?
Well, when he came over, I was already over at the National Security Council. I'd gone over there from working for Devin Nunes, and Ezra Cohen was the director of intelligence for the National Security Council, and he talked to me, you know, we talked quite a bit, and he asked me to come up and take a look at some files, and what those files was a record of all the unmasking requests that had been submitted, and we started to do some work taking a look at this, because what was interesting was that it let us know right away that there had been collection on Trump campaign and Trump transition officials from, you know, the fall of 2016 right on up through the inauguration. The NSA was collecting on phone calls and communications between nominees for Trump positions like Secretary Mattis, Jared Kushner, other officials, and they were writing reports. NSA was writing reports, information reports, on those conversations. And what was amazing is none of them, when we looked at them, had any actual intelligence value. And that would have been a violation of the rules for generating a report. They would collect things on phone calls between, you know, Jared Kushner and a Middle East official, or Jared Kushner and an official in London. And those were made into reports, but there was nothing in them that would be of intelligence value, which is the key to actually writing a report. And we identified those because people were requesting the specific names of people. A U.S. identified person would be U.S. person one or U.S. person two. And so they were unmasking those specific names so they could identify who in the Trump transition was actually talking to Mohammed bin Salman, for example. Yeah. And so that led us to a level of other questions that we began to unravel things. And we let my former boss, Devin Nunes, know, and he came over and started to take a look at this stuff.
Okay, so Derek, just because people are not steeped in all of this, the NSA has these really marvelous abilities to spy on people, and it's usually directed overseas. There's a barrier to doing it at home, but I guess that that famous bill that was passed after 9/11, which escapes me the name of it, had some restrictions, right? The Patriot Act, yes. And so, but this was still, these were like people around Obama requesting these unmaskings, as I understand it. Was that right?
That's correct. It was people in U.S. Treasury, it was Samantha Powers, it was people in the West Wing, in Vice President Biden's office, etc.
So, and they didn't have the right to do that. The point is that is illegal. That is breaking the statutes. And before the Patriot Act, really, our spy agencies were not allowed to turn their craft on American citizens. And that's part of what was so shocking about that.
Well there'd be incidental, there would be coverage that would pick up conversations incidentally, okay? But the threshold that has to be crossed is there's criteria that is clearly laid out at the National Security Agency about what is of intelligence value. Does it meet a priority intelligence requirement of some type? There has to be a legitimate reason for the NSA to actually craft and disseminate a report. And we analyzed those reports, and they did not meet any of the thresholds for actually preparing and transmitting a report to the consumers in the executive branch.
So
the only item of interest was because it was Jared Kushner or it was Don Jr., or yes. It was a campaign official.
Yeah, so they were truly spying on President Trump, which he said from the beginning, but they really were, and this was the proof of it. But now, before we get into the details of what Tulsi has found and is claiming, I want to talk a little bit about Adam Schiff, because as I recall, Devin Nunes was the head of that committee, the House Permanent Select Committee. And then they brought some ethics charges to him for doing that report, something like that. And then suddenly we've got Adam Schiff leading this committee. Can you just say a word about that?
Well, look, the ethics charges were brought, and the speaker asked Devin to step down. And so we put the next ranking Republican in charge, and Adam Schiff was still there as the Democrat lead, but you know, it was still a Republican leading the effort. But keep in mind, this is the thing about Devin Nunes, and I still don't think he gets the credit, because he saw what was going on, and he had the courage and the moral strength to take on not only the intelligence community, but also the establishment, which included, in my mind, you know, people like, you know, Paul Ryan and others that did not want anybody to rattle the boat, okay, or shake things up. And there was a lot of pressure, even from House Intelligence Committee members, not to go down the road that Devin chose. But Devin smelled a skunk, and he went after it. And, you know, none of this would have been coming out if it hadn't been for him following his instincts back in late 16 and 17.
Yes. So that's and Kevin McCarthy and Paul Ryan were both a part of that. But what happened, however it happened, is Adam Schiff, because he is who he is, you know, he's this scary, open-eyed, perfect, very skilled liar who ended up really being the dominant voice in all that. And he had a lot of control over that room, whatever that room was, that skiff with all this information. And nobody could talk about the things they were reading. So, and then Adam Schiff was the one who kept saying Russian collusion, Russian collusion, Russian collusion. He was the town crier for what we're going to talk about in just a second. And I wanted to make that point.
Go ahead. And Sandy, one important thing is, you know, Tulsi Gabbard released the list of people who were in the meeting on December 9th, the day after they decided to squash the draft PDB that said there was no Russian interference. And in that meeting on December 9th, there was a gentleman by the name of Mihar Bitar, who just finished up 4 years as the Biden administration's senior intelligence officer and counselor to the president for the National Security Council. But Mihar Bitar was at that meeting on December 9th, and then he moved from that, you know, working over there at the end of the Obama administration, and he became a senior lawyer for Adam Schiff to drive the Russia hoax once he moved over to HPSI working for Adam Schiff. So that's an important linkage that goes from the Obama White House and the intelligence Russia hoax being crafted with the ICA and Mihar Bitar going over to work for Adam Schiff.
Wow. Okay, that's really interesting. So thank you for telling us that. Now, Derek, you and I both probably have been really reading all the things that Tulsi said, but let's explain for a second. She's actually accusing, and I don't remember everybody's name. I just gave you the ones I remember. She's accusing Obama, Hillary Clinton, James Comey. I don't know if Joe Biden's on that list yet, but James Clapper, John Brennan, Susan Rice, of a treasonous conspiracy. This is very, very serious. So what is that treasonous conspiracy in regard to Russiagate, so-called Russiagate?
Well, let's take a step back. Mr. Brennan, Mr. Comey, and others in the West Wing of the White House, they were all aware. And if we're to go back and look at a timeline chart, we can identify when they became aware that the Hillary Clinton campaign team had a strategy to dirty Donald Trump by linking him to Russia and Putin, okay? And they started to, Hillary even started to tweet about it in late July and August. But the DNC and others had started to pay for the crafting of the Steele dossier going back into the spring of 2016. The Durham report lays all of this out. And we also did on HPSI when we did our investigation. Those leaders all knew that there was, poison at the fruit of the tree. And there was an organized effort to dirty up Donald Trump with the Russia hoax. And that was pushed into the intelligence community, into law enforcement, into FBI. Some didn't know what was going on with the Hillary campaign, but others did. And it corrupted the whole process. That's an important element here. When we look at the ICA, that was, I think, one of the main points of the Tulsi Gabbard report, which was drafted between December 8th and the end of December, and then briefed to Obama. Obama directed that ICA be drafted to conclude that Russia and Putin wanted Trump to win and that they had made efforts to help him win. And that was just a falsehood. And that's what Tulsi is getting at. And we can talk more about why that's a falsehood, in a moment.
Well, as I understand it, Obama got a daily briefing, and I'm a layperson, so I might get some of the words wrong, so correct me if you need to, Derek. But he got a daily briefing, and in those daily briefings, I think we have a record that it actually said in those briefings that Russia had nothing to do with the election. They didn't have the ability to influence the election, and they didn't have the interest in trying to help Hillary, President Trump win over Hillary Clinton. It just was there. And then somehow along the way, people began to insist that the intelligence be changed. Maybe you could explain that part to us.
Yeah, leading up to through the election, of course, there's monitoring of the threat to the election process, and there's continuing monitoring of what foreign countries are saying and what they're doing in regard to our U.S. election. That's normal. What changed, however, was this, there was a presidential daily briefing item to be, approved on December 8th, and the FBI and CIA director, Mr. Brennan, thought otherwise, because it was concluding that Russia was benign when it came to this election, and Mr. Brennan and the FBI said, no, we need to, we're not going to agree with this. There was a meeting called the very next day in the Situation Room with President Obama, Susan Rice, the past Secretary of State and others, including Comey and Valerie Jarrett and the whole list of people, Avril Haines, who became the DNI, Mihar Bhattar, who I just mentioned, and they decided that they were going to craft an intelligence community assessment to lay out what Russia had done to support Trump, that Russia, Putin wanted Trump to win, preferred Trump, and the activities that were undertaken to help him do that. And so they did a crash intelligence community assessment, but it wasn't an intelligence community assessment. It was a narrowly selected few chosen by Mr. Brennan to draft the document with some support from the FBI. They included this fake Steele dossier that the FBI knew at the time was false and was poorly sourced. They knew about the Hillary effort to dirty up Trump with these false accusations, but they went ahead and drafted this ICA and published it over the objections of the Russia House at CIA and career intelligence officials in other locations. And that is well documented in a HPSI report that has not seen the light of day. But this is an important thing that Tulsi is putting out. And Mr. Radcliffe in CIA about 10 days ago put out a report, an 8-page report, laying out how Mr. Brennan had committed perjury in 2023 in denying any role in shaping the content of the ICA. So I'll stop there because I'm sure you have questions.
Well, I was just thinking, two people come to my mind who were, you alluded to the fact that not everybody knew all of this in these agencies. This was top down, it seems to me. And so there was a whistleblower, I believe, I'm not sure which agency, but a whistleblower who really, really went to bat saying, he was so upset, it's not true. And I'd love for you to say something about that. And then there was an FBI agent, Joe Pientka, who did the same thing. He was shocked and upset, visibly upset and emotional, because he had no idea that this report existed. He thought what he'd been told was true. So there were some heroes in this, weren't there?
There were. Joe Pientka is the FBI agent, and he was partnered up with Peter Strzok for the interview with Mike Flynn. And, you know, when he was interviewed by the Durham folks, you know, it was very clear that he had no idea about, you know, some of the other shenanigans with the Hillary campaign and others. He was just not aware of it. And he said it would have colored the direction of their investigation if he had been aware of it. There was an unnamed CIA analyst, very senior CIA analyst, who became a whistleblower, and he was, you know, threatened and intimidated, and eventually we did get him on the record, but, you know, he was pushed to acquiesce to this new narrative saying that Putin supported Trump, and he did not, and so he was taken off the case, and amenable analysts were chosen by Brennan to write the new report, because this was clearly doctored. Now, I'd like to say three quick things about it. They not only wrote a new report, but they did not pay any attention to the voluminous amount of credible, historically reliable source reporting that provided a narrative that was just the opposite of the conclusion of the intelligence community assessment that was ultimately written. That's number one. Two, they changed reporting in order to make rumored and unreliable reports that condemned or, you know, said Putin supported Trump. They changed it in order to give it credibility in order to enhance their narrative that Trump was supported by Putin. So those are two overt actions taken by the handpicked team by Brennan to doctor the intelligence and come up with a false narrative that set the stage for the Mueller report and the crippling of the Trump administration. Keep in mind also that Eric Chiarella was involved, yes, in this process, who later became the whistleblower for the first Ukraine impeachment trial.
That's right. Oh, it's so complicated, but it's important. You know,
yes,
this is, we can't lose these details. It's been 10 years, Derek, and no one has been brought to justice. And I think people have to understand what has nearly happened here. They tried to subvert the government. This was an insurrection or a treason, act of treason, or both. There's just no question about it. And I want to just mention, you know, your friend Lee Smith has written this article that just came out just a few days ago called The Brennan Forgery. And he says that the Clinton Plan Intelligence was the name refers to intelligence the CIA received in late July of 2016 from a Dutch spy agency. The Dutch had penetrated a Russian intelligence agency that appears to have hacked the emails of Clinton allies and Democratic officials. And it was from these communications that the Russians learned that the Clinton campaign had devised a plan to smear Trump as a Russian agent to deflect attention from her use of a private email server. So from a Dutch intelligence agency who penetrated a Russian intelligence agency. Man, we're learning so much. It's amazing. Derek,
that
I just
is in fact true, and that should have been made. That information should have been made available to everyone in the FBI that was investigating this, but it was not.
Well, it's safe to say, my understanding from reading is that James Comey was really all over pushing this false narrative at the FBI, correct?
That is correct. And, you know, so were others. And then you had the Crossfire Hurricane team that, you know, quickly understood that the Steele dossier was unreliable. And later in the fall, what they did is they tried to bury their main source, this so-called Russian source that was providing this information, who was Mr. Dushenko, who was actually living in Northern Virginia. And, you know, they put him under a new cover in order to hide him from investigators like House Intelligence Committee being able to identify them, because they said he was a source and, you know, he was masked and we couldn't have access to him. They denied us access to FBI agents who were involved. They denied us access to documents, you know, that should have been routinely provided to us. We faced a brick wall in trying to get access to people, documents, and records from the FBI and CIA when we were trying to investigate this. And fortunately, we did have whistleblowers who came forward. Most of them did not come forward as official whistleblowers because they were not confident that they would be protected through the whistleblower process, because there's a long record of retribution within the FBI and DOJ on those organizations' personnel that do become whistleblowers.
Derek, just a question. Do you think it's possible? I even hate to defend these people at all, but is it possible that people like Peter Strzok and Lisa Page did not know what the real intelligence said, that Russia had no interest, no capability, and it was Hillary Clinton's doing? Is it possible they might not have known that and really thought that President Trump was a Russian agent and that Russia was trying to steal our election or turn it to get Trump elected? Is that possible?
Absolutely not in the case of Andrew McCabe, Lisa Page, Peter Strzok, Mr. Comey. They were a close-knit group. They were aware of the history. They were aware of the Steele dossier. And then you had, you know, Nellie Orr. And, you know, her husband working in DOJ as conduits for leaking and disseminating this information to the, you know, to the media, but also working with the Crossfire Hurricane people to make sure that, you know, they were sharing information. You know, for a large number of these people, you know, they were working together. They had a common goal. They hated Donald J. Trump. Their personal interests, their career interests, their professional interests, their financial interests were tied to an outcome. And their protecting their own careers from exposure was also part of this, because, and one of the reasons, remember, some of these individuals like Peter Strzok and Joe Pienka went in to the West Wing, did the interview with Michael Flynn. They knew that they were bending the rules by doing it. Andrew McCabe and Comey knew it, okay? And when they came back, Peter Strzok and Joe Pienka, and they came back and said, no, we don't think, you know, Michael Flynn lied. He told us that, you know, you guys must have the transcript of the phone call. You tell me. And when they told that to Andrew McCabe said, we're going to get him on lying right up to 302 because we're going to hammer him. Okay.
You know,
they knew that Michael Flynn was innocent. They had a transcript of the phone call with the Russian ambassador. They knew that it exonerated Michael Flynn. Yet they went into the vice president, okay, later, with Mike, you know, Vice President Pence, and told him that Michael Flynn had lied to them, et cetera, and started this effort to get Michael Flynn fired, okay, because Michael Flynn, in my view, was going to help unravel all of this. He understood the deep state. He understood who these actors were. He understood how they cooked intelligence and other things like on ISIS and Al-Qaeda to protect the institutions. So, you know, I don't give them any room for compassion or empathy or doubt that they might not have understood. These people were actors that were lying, changing documents and other things in order to get an outcome.
Oh, well, all right. Well, that's
to the FISA court. Remember, they lied to the FISA court.
Yes. Yes, I do remember that. My husband used to work in the FISA court. He was an FBI agent, and he would present cases or present evidence in the FISA court during right after 9/11. But anyway, I want to ask you, this is maybe out of the scope of your knowledge, but if you had to say the innocence or complicity of Vice President Pence, yes or no, in all of this, if he actually knew better and or if he was just an ambitious guy who liked the fact that he, I don't know. I just want to know if you have any knowledge that he might have been a part of this effort.
I don't have any knowledge, but here's what I will I will condemn the vice president and his chief of staff and Rance Priebus for not having asked for the official transcript of the phone call between Michael Flynn and the Russian ambassador. That everything, all the allegations against Flynn hinged on that transcript. Okay. And they did not ask for that. They took it at the word of Andrew McCabe and others that this was, okay, that he had lied to them. And what was he covering up? And keep in mind also that Gina Haspel, you know, who became the director of CIA under Trump, was the station chief in London when efforts were made to dirty up Michael Flynn, okay, at that point in time, with the FBI's support, you know, to allege he was having an affair with a Russian, et cetera, at a conference, and that he was untrustworthy. And they also asserted that he had gone to Moscow and had dinner and he was at a table with Putin. Oh. And that was also suspicious and helped build the case. What they didn't say was that Michael Flynn had pre-coordinated that with the intelligence community, had briefed him, was given, you know, intelligence requirements and information requests and things that he should be looking for when he is there. And when he came back, he was fully debriefed. Yet they did a full court press, the FBI did, and the CIA, to dirty him up.
So what they set up, as I understand it, Derek, it was like a honeypot scheme. And this Russian girl now is speaking up, too. I saw her tweeting about this yesterday, how they ruined her reputation because there was nothing between her and Michael Flynn. So it was a whole, and it was Mark Short. He was the guy that was the chief of staff for Vice President Pence. I just have to get his name in there because I think he's got his hands all over this too. Yeah. So just a personal thing, Derek. In 2016, right before the election, I was steeped in all of this because I was doing a daily morning talk show, and I was watching the news during the day. Just listening as I'm doing other things. And I saw Jay Johnson, who was the Homeland Secretary under Barack Obama. He was just doing an interview, and suddenly, out of the blue, he says, we think there may be Russian interference with this election. Now, this is like summertime. And then he started talking about nationalizing our elections. And Derek, because I've been around the block a few times, I've traveled a lot, I've been in a lot of communist countries, I lived in Berlin. There was something in me, I said, they're up to something. They are planting a seed because this is exactly what they're going to do. And it turned out to be that. And I don't know what his role in that was, but I'm just telling you that did happen. All right, so who exactly was then involved? And let's talk about personnel. Obama, if you were to place blame on any one person more than other persons, would it be Obama?
I think the decision was made by Mr. Obama at that 9 December meeting. I think that's the fact, okay? You know, you have to question this thing with Susan Rice writing that email to herself that they were told to do things by the book. That seems to be CYA in my view. So, but you go back, you know, there were discussions, and if you go through the Durham report, there are points in time between, you know, 1 May and, you know, December 8th, where various personalities were having meetings and communications in the White House or in the IC or at the FBI about Trump, Russia, and the intelligence plan of the Hillary campaign. You know, a lot of people don't understand that, you know, the DNC and the Hillary campaign hired the law firm of Perkins Coie to be their cutout for a contract with Fusion GPS to originally draft the Steele dossier, which became, you know, a trigger for much of this. And that draft, you know, Durham, you know, wound up developing several drafts of, finding several drafts of that Steele dossier during his investigation as it evolved from the early spring of 2016 until the summer of 2016. And it was really in May that they decided to hang this Putin-Russia thing on Trump. And then we saw tweets and things from Hillary over the summer. But there were meetings and conversations by many of these senior officials that we are all familiar with their names. You know, I think Epoch Times has got a great one-page, full-page layout of all the actors of Spygate, of what it's what it was called. So I think, you know, they are all culpable in a conspiracy, a seditious insurrection, if you will. And this led to the Mueller report at the end of the day. And I think it also fed into the Ukrainian first impeachment trial, because there's a whole pattern here over the years. And it's many of the same actors. So it's hard to pin down exactly, you know, who they are. I think the major names, you know, we do know very well. But when I mention a Mihar Bhatar in their role, or an Eric Chiamella, most people don't know who they are, but they were important cogs in this process.
Right. Well, I think we should also say, we can't talk about everything. It's just so complicated. But James Comey was key in leaking that dossier to the press. Very sneaky. Very, very sneaky. And, you know, the thing of it is, Derek, he laughs about it now. For instance, that setup to have those FBI agents that you mentioned, Peter Strzok and Joe Pianca, go in and entrap Lieutenant Flynn. Lieutenant General Flynn. Comey laughs about that. He was asked, you know, on an interview, I think it was NBC, how did they get in there to do that? And he said, I sent them. And then the audience just roars with laughter. This is how cynical and sick this was. It goes beyond just lying and setting someone up if you have real malice against them, but it's like been a game for them. I just find that appalling.
Well, here's something most people don't know, and that is this, and that the DOJ pressured Michael Flynn's lawyers to get him to acquiesce to a guilty plea, not only by putting pressure on his son, threatening that they were going to arrest him and try him, but by threatening the law firm and saying that they're going to go after individuals from the law firm for other FARA things. So they were going to give them a sweetheart deal on some problems that they had if they brought Flynn along to agreeing to a guilty plea. And that's the degree to which they corrupted themselves.
So, Derek, we've talked about so much, and I would like to know if you think that this rises to the level of treasonous conspiracy, because that's what Tulsi's saying when she in her referral. So that, what are your thoughts about that? I know it's a legal, it's a sort of an undefinable term, treason, but what do you think?
Well, I think a conspiracy exists. The underlying crime, I think, exists. I'm not a lawyer, so I don't know how to define that. And I just leave that to great lawyers like John Eastman and Mike Davis to help us understand it, okay?
Yeah, that sounds good. All right, well, listen, Derek, for your service, I want to thank you again. I mean, before you go, you're nominated by the president for some position, and you're waiting to be confirmed. What is that position?
That is in abeyance right now, and I'm back to working with the Presidential Personnel Office because the National Security Council got realigned, and I'm no longer going to be the senior director for intelligence there. So, because there's no longer a directorate of intelligence now that Rubio's restructured the NSC.
Oh, okay. But you're still there plugging away. I hope you're going to be there doing something because we need you. Well, Derek, yeah. Colonel Derek Harvey, thank you so much. And hopefully we can talk again soon as this thing unfolds. This is not the end of it.
I would like to, Sandy. Yeah. God bless you.
Okay, the same to you, Derek. All right, Sandy Rios on Sandy Rios 24/7. Hi, this is Sandy Rios. A lot of Christians would be shocked to learn they are personally profiting from abortion and pornography. It's unnerving to realize just how many companies and corporations are actively involved in unbiblical practices. To help cut through the red tape, there is a great option known as Timothy Plan. Timothy Plan is the pioneer in biblically responsible investing. Timothy Plan carefully filters out companies involved in practices Scripture tells us to avoid. We are in an all-out culture war. One powerful way to make a difference is to put our money where our values are. Please go to timothyplan.com/Sandy. That's timothyplan.com/Sandy. Or call 1-800-TIM-PLAN. That's 1-800-846-7526. Discover how to be a biblically responsible investor.
Before investing, carefully consider the fund's investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses of the investment company. This and other important information can be found in the fund's prospectus. To obtain a copy, visit timothyplan.com or call 800-846-7526. Read each prospectus carefully before investing.
This is Sandy Rios 24/7 on American Family Radio.
When you become a monthly sponsor of Preborn, you will actually get a picture of the babies you help to save. That's pretty good plum, isn't it? But also, you can sponsor what's called a day of life. And that's sponsoring an entire day of women, you know, having ultrasounds at these clinics. And it's more money. It's a bigger investment. For a gift of $5,000, you can sponsor an entire day. And so that's why we call it a day of life. If you'd like to do that, if you can afford to do that, go to preborn.com/Sandy. That's preborn.com/Sandy.
The Sandy Rios 24/7 podcast are available at AFR.net. Back to Sandy Rios 24/7 on American Family Radio.
Is of such historic consequence that it cannot be limited to one or two or three different people. You just outlined the implications and the effects of what actually occurred. And I think you're really putting into a clear picture what we are referring to when we refer to the deep state. It is very far reaching. These are people who are intent on undermining the will of the American people and trying to ultimately put themselves above our democracy. And this is why it's so important that we continue down this path, we continue to stay very focused. I question the same things that you're asking here. I don't know how it is. Yes, I put my team on this. We've been working on this over the last few months. I've been in this role as Director of National Intelligence for just about 6 months. I don't know what excuse there is for those who supposedly investigated this previously, whether it was Durham or others, that they were not able to put together the dots and ultimately show the truth to the American people. President Trump has delivered a maximum transparency mandate, and this is exactly what we're doing. The American people need to see the truth, and we're going to continue to do that every single day that I'm here.
All right. Well, that's, of course, the voice of Tulsi Gabbard. That was her with Maria Bartiromo on Sunday Morning Futures, and much of the clips that I'm playing for you today are from that program. Tulsi, when she was nominated, I wasn't excited about it. I really wasn't. I had a lot of reservations about her, but I think I owe her an apology because she's been terrific on this. And isn't it ironic? Tulsi's from Hawaii, and so is Barack Obama, grew up in Hawaii. I just think that's an interesting side note. We're going to have another discussion about this, and I'm going to ask Bruce to join me because there's so much more to say about it, as you can imagine. When we were in Washington, D.C., when I first met him back in 2001, it was his job to go into that FISA court, which was totally corrupted by this process. We need to talk about that, and we need to talk about all the other people that were harmed by this, judges who were corrupted, what's happening with them and what should happen with them. And we'll talk about that on our next discussion on Sandy Rios 24/7. I want to thank you for listening. Always, I want to thank our sponsor, especially Timothy Plan, who helps you put your money where your values are and discover how to be a biblically responsible investor. Visit timothyplan.com/Sandy. That's timothyplan.com/Sandy. Or call 1-800-TIM-PLAN. That's 1-800-TIM-PLAN. Well, thank you for listening to our special guest, Colonel Derek Harvey, today. And we'll talk more about it in the next podcast. And I think that it's really beneficial, so important. And I'm grateful that you're listening. This is Sandy Rios saying goodbye for today on this edition of Sandy Rios 24/7.